This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We are in the studios with Patrick Washington. He's known as the Black Picasso. And we're going to open up with some poetry, please, Patrick. Let's hear your voice.
Absolutely, absolutely. Very happy to be here. Here's a memory. I remember one time a kid was 11 years old, riding the cheese, squeezing my eyes shut to keep bullies from seeing me, crying and beating me up. Fifth graders breathing the dragon, I'm in the cut, wishing I was two seats up front with Nikki Johnson. And I love Nikki Johnson. She had this butterscotch complexion that had me always begging her pardon, like, let me off of the bus. I hear cuss words and laughter following. I'm halfway down the block. I'm pausing. I'm slowing down. I'm stopping. I'm imagining I'm Schwarzenegger. I'm total recalling when Pops told me backing down was not an option. Either you turn tail, cry and you wail, or you come back and rock him in all of his chakras, house keys out of your pockets. Hawks spit and pray to God for power to find that mark and knock it. Stride right, shaking the ground. Bullies had better put their book bags down. But that's when I got beat up. And I remember these playground games, the dirt on my face streaked with tears of shame. Oh. When a bully beat me up, made fun of me, called me ugly, and everybody at the playground laughed because they thought it was funny. Oh. They made fun of my lips, nose, hair, eyes, even made fun of my clothes. I ran straight home, but Mama was waiting for me. She sat me down, looked me in my eyes, and explained exactly who I was to me. She told me that I had eyes so deep and so dark that I could hold the stars within them. I had a regal African nose like my grandfather did. I had full lips that one day women would love to kiss. I had a complexion without comparison and a pure heart full of compassion. A mind that will unlock countless secrets of the heart and a soul that is destined to find heaven. An 11-year-old smile to melt any icy stare, and a baby man's courage to handle any 11-year-old scare. She told me the curves of my face told a story that would last 1,000 years. My mama wiped away every last one of my tears by staring me in my face and telling me that I was without a doubt the most gorgeous young princess she had ever seen before in her life. And Patricia Washington ain't never lied. So I know that my mama was right.
Oh, Patrick, that is fabulous. I love you. That's an autobiography. It's an autobiography. We've missed you.
No, I missed you too. I thought it would make for a good introduction.
It's your story. It's your story. And I'm so happy that we have a famous hip-hop artist who is well-known in Washington and this area, Washington, Maryland, Virginia. He's a legend, and now he's an arts activist, educator, and his light keeps going on. We know what an activist is. What's an art activist? How can art change anything?
Oh, man. You know, art and activism, honestly, they go hand in hand to me because it is our way of explaining how we view the world, right? We experience life. We go through these things, ups and downs, and we have to try to process them and navigate the things that we go through and maybe the mechanisms and the larger picture that made these things happen. Sometimes it's political, sometimes it's personal. And I think if you want to affect change and explain, you know, what's going on around you, you put it in your art. It could be through song, right? Through poems, through visual art. And I think anytime you do that with intention, you are an activist.
Right. Well said. And I think each time we add to the river, each of our little drops do make a change. Patrick, you have done so much in your life, and I've known you for years.
Yes.
But this is, you're just still going strong. So I want to talk about everything that I remember about you.
Okay.
But before that, I still want more poetry.
Okay.
Because that's where you shine. And I think you were part of the Poetry Seas.
Poemsies, yes, yes, yes. It's an interesting name. Poem, P-O-E-M, then there's a hyphen, and then
C-E-E-S.
Right, and it's a combination of poetry and emceeing. And emceeing, which is from the hip hop tradition, basically, which is even going further back, the griot, right?
Well, give it to us, Patrick Washington, and then we'll find out what makes him tick.
Let's see. I'm going to do a tribute poem. This is going to be dedicated to one Steveland Morris, a.k.a. Stevie Wonder. I wrote this poem when he had announced that he was moving. He was leaving America, and he was moving to, I believe, Ghana. I just learned that one of God's most magnetic creations will be leaving us, and it will be taking Stevie Wonder with it. I don't mean the man. I mean the myth, the music, his vocals, the rhythms, the feng shui of how his songs sway. It's the best soundtrack to any date ever. I don't care how unattainable you think they are. Stevie puts even the most distant star in reach. Dreams solidify when his fingertips touch the ebony and ivory. This idol sees no rivalry. He's out of sight like my Cherie Amour. And y'all be like, he can see. His albums are the grand opening of one's heart. Those fingers can manipulate organs, his, hers, everyone's. This is true. He created an album so sexy that even plants are making love to his sounds. His alchemy can change everything. I mean, ain't that voice sugar? Ain't his songs spice? I knew a girl who shredded her sorry ex via text. His crooked toes, his bald spot, his limp lies. He responded with 2 tickets to see Stevie, and she's going. I don't want to bore you with it, but you need to get you some forgiveness and press play. I don't think you get it. Minnie Riperton, Denise Williams, and Syreeta Wright all sang on one song. Do you know what that can do to your tomorrows? I ain't superstitious, but you need to find that girl. Pull her close. Say you will be her Sir Duke if only she will be your summer soft golden lady. When they play, I wish. Forget about everyone and pretend that you are on a trampoline somewhere between his notes and the stratosphere. See if they join you. Resist the impulse to touch during "Isn't She Lovely" and just smile through the possibilities like he does and enjoy all of your other senses. Inhale the memory of your first and hold it. Imagine rolling back your eyes so far that you have no choice but to trust your loved ones in the room to take care of you. That is what "Don't You Worry About a Thing" feels like. If you are anything like me, then you will overflow when either "Knocks Me Off My Feet" or "As" plays. A swaying skyscraper, an aching volcano, or a whirling, humming satellite becoming any of these will do. When you can take no more, leave your body. Tell the Lord you're just visiting. Ear to the gate, realizing that heaven does have a southeast, a Five Points, a Bourbon Street, and they already play his music up there. This far from the sun, and they are jamming on the one. You need to get as much of this man as you can, y'all. Treat yourself. You deserve it. Because one day these songs will echo, and you won't be there to listen. One day there will be no wonder.
Did you ever send that to him?
I did not. No.
Why not?
Not yet.
You
not
know,
yet.
You still have time. Because you'd be surprised how, no matter how big they are, they really would appreciate being acknowledged.
Really?
It's not too late.
I think I just may do that. I know one of my
poems. We'll send it to Stevie Wonder USA. He's back, isn't he?
Yeah, he's back. Yeah. I heard he was somewhere in Maryland recently.
So we have... We have Patrick Washington, who is a celebrity hip-hop poet artist, who then became a celebrity arts educator. And I want to talk about how this all began. Where were you born?
I was born in Daytona Beach, Florida.
And where did you go to school?
I went to, I was an Army brat, so I bounced around. bounced around from Maryland to Okinawa, Japan. That's where I spent most of my time, to the Philippines, most of Asia.
You went to high school in Japan?
Yes, I went to high school in Japan. No, I'm sorry. I went to middle school in Japan. Then right about the age of 14 is when we came back. And I've been here in the DMV area ever since.
And we know it, for sure. You've left your print. And you started working with musical instruments in high school?
Yeah. You know, being the new kid, you know, coming to this area, I felt just out of sorts, and I felt like I was an outcast. So I kind of turned inward. I became a people watcher. I played lots of music. I joined the band at school, and as you heard in my first poem, you know, fell in love with the girl from across the neighborhood, and I would play, you know, romantic saxophone songs out the window, hoping that she would hear them. It never worked. It never worked. But that became my window into expression.
Who was the first one? What was your first knowledge of the spoken word where you say, I can do that? Can you imagine? Can you remember when you got triggered? What inspired you? Somebody must have said to you, you are good. One teacher must have noticed you. So what do you remember that sparked you to know that you could be somebody and perform? Was there a teacher?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. I remember I became aware of my talent when I got in trouble. I got in trouble at home. I remember I used to write stories. I used to write just little fantasy stories, you know, in my room. And I would make up these wild tales of, you know, just of me having an exciting life and being sort of dangerous. You know what I mean? I was the dangerous kid.
Your alter ego.
Right, alter ego. And what happened was I wrote this particularly, disturbing story, you know, and it was written in the form of a letter to my cousin. And at the end of the letter, it was like, I'm running away and I'm leaving. And I left the letter in the house. And, you know, my parents, being good parents that they are, they, I guess, went in my room and found it. And they got alarmed.
Of course.
And they came straight to school and pulled me out of class.
Oh, dear.
Pulled me out of class. And they were like, wait a minute, what is this? What are you going through? Are you doing this? And I had to explain. I said, wait, no.
I'm a writer.
Right? I'm a writer. This is my imagination. And then they, you know, they settled down. I convinced them I wasn't, you know, I didn't have my bags packed. And at that point, they were like, okay, you're talented, but let's turn these talents elsewhere.
Well, let's hear that language that got you into trouble and what became of it. Patrick Washington was called Black Picasso.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got that name in high school.
But that had to be, that was honorific. That was said as a compliment.
Yeah, you know, I you
Picasso
know.
Picasso is no little figure, so you must have made a mark.
I, you know, as just like many of my peers, I had a, my early years were spent, you know, entrenched in this thing called hip hop, right? You know, the rap was still being born, and I was listening to, you know, these MCs, you know, the groups called the Cold Crush and these other MCs. And I was kind of, you know, practicing myself, you know, myself and my friends. And we were coming up with these names, right? You have to have a stage name. And my friend Anton Baxter, he had his name. And he said, well, he heard me, you know, do my little raps. And he was like, okay, you're kind of painting a picture. So we're going to call you Picasso. You know, and then it stuck, and I added the Black Picasso to it to give me a little more dramatic flair.
Oh, and you've got it. Let's hear your flair on the page.
Absolutely. this particular poem is, this came about during the George Floyd protests. Why this poem was shot. The keyboard clicks sounded like chambered bullets. It made the white folks uncomfortable. This poem didn't defer or stifle itself. This poem ain't speak the king's English. It drawled at authority, rolled its eyes, barked when spoken to. This poem kept walking when commanded to stop. Its hands were hidden deep in its pockets. This poem balled its fists. This poem was reaching for something. Its hands were out, so the poem looked like a weapon. But it was too dark. Was the night or the poem too dark? Doesn't matter. This poem didn't know when to shut up. Don't act like that poem was innocent. Poems like that have done damage before. What about poems like that killing other poems all the time and no one says anything? Everyone wants to read the poem when it's lying still because it's easier to edit that way. You won't acknowledge this poem until you see its mother scrubbing ink from the sidewalk. Now, this is a quiet space. Poems like this aren't said around here. That's why it looked suspicious. It smelled of street corners. This poem was probably on something. Matter of fact, poem could have been a rap. This poem wasn't armed, but it had every right to fight. It had to. This poem seen a lot. It hustled to feed every stanza, chased the fading footprints of poems before it, picked up the pieces and created this thesis. This poem screams for the pieces who never find theirs, justice or peace. This poem was in the wrong place at the wrong skin under the wrong sky, wrong plane, wrong train, wrong street, wrong town, wrong clothes, wrong hair, wrong style, wrong apartment, the wrong damn couch. There were too many poems in the car. This poem panicked and ran because of the warrant. This poem remained calm. Its weapon was registered. This poem was playing in the park. This poem simply knocked on the wrong door. This poem was having a cookout. That poem needed a doctor, not a cop. That poem was engaged to be married. That one was trying to make a few extra bucks. This poem's car broke down late one night. That one was standing in its doorway. That one only wanted to get home, drop its baggage, lay back, close its eyes, and breathe until the stress of being this poem fell away. This poem didn't need you, but here you come anyway.
Wow, you've still got it. Hey, you have still got it.
We try. And like I said, you know, the activism, you know, you have to process what's going on around you and try to find that.
And your worldview winds up on the page, which I think is so interesting. Now, talk to me about the past. You came to your full potential, you say, in the 1990s, which seemed like a minute ago to me. And that was a vibrant community of artists. And what was the scene like?
Yes.
Who were some of the artists that were so active and that really were you shown and began your career?
The mid to early 90s, you know, was when I kind of ventured out into the art scene and just made so many great friends and connections. And they were a second family, pretty much, you know. And you know many of these folks, you know, the folks from Kenny Carroll to
DJ Renegade.
DJ Renegade,
who now is Joel Diaz.
Yes, Porter.
Well, what were you all doing? I mean, we know poetry was going on, but what was the music scene? And how did hip hop interface with go-go? I have to stop back at go-go. Now, we're famous for that contribution to the world.
Yes.
And I've listened to the music, and I have, if someone asks me to describe it, I have a hard time.
It's very difficult.
I call it rhythm, mostly rhythm. How do you describe
it? Yeah. It's rooted in funk music, you know, which is kind of a more, earthy form of R&B. It's very percussive.
It is.
Yeah. So that is definitely the heartbeat. And it needs to be experienced live, really, to really get the gist of it.
But you know, WHUT has recorded lots of it, and they play it all the time.
Oh.
I'm getting flashbacks. How did hip-hop interface with go-go? It wasn't friendly.
Well, you know, they both were happening at the same time, coming, you know, of age, and because at one point, in the early 70s, you had figures here in the Washington area, such as Chuck Brown, who was widely considered the godfather of go-go. He realized that when he's playing these concerts, he didn't want to always stop the song. right? The song, you know, you do a song for 5 minutes and then stop, and then there's a break. Instead of having a break, he decided to just play one continuous beat and then kind of fit the music in that tempo, in that beat each time, you know? So that way the music never really ended. And the music kept going,
but there was no lyrics.
And going. Well, he would be the lyricist. He would serve as a lyricist. He was a guitarist, right? But he would also serve as a lyricist. So he would come in and do call and response chants with the audience. He would shout out, you know, certain neighborhoods wherever he happened to be playing. You know what I mean? And then everybody gets to become a celebrity and feel like that they're involved. Right?
Oh, that's great.
So let me say that while that was happening here. In New York, a totally different scene was happening, which was, you know, being founded by a DJ, music DJ named Kool Herc. And much the same way, he wanted to keep the music going on and on and on without having these breaks. So he decided to use two turntables. Instead of having one record player, he had two. And then he could switch back and forth from one song to the other with no interruptions. And that was the birth of hip hop. So these two things were happening at the same time. Mm. And then, as we well know, you know, music travels, and we both fell in love.
And as you say, do you know what this can do to your tomorrows? It did a lot for our tomorrows.
Yes.
And name a couple of the people that you worked with then. I'm thinking of Tony Black.
Oh, Tony Lightfoot. Blackman? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, Tony Blackman and Tony Asante Lightfoot. The two Tonys were widely revered on the scene as, the mamas of that scene, because Tony had her reading series.
She's in Chicago now?
Back and forth between here and Chicago, yes.
Well, anyway, I just want everyone to know that Washington was what New York was. We had our own flavor, our own taste, our own celebrities.
Absolutely.
And Patrick Washington was among them. So let's hear a little bit more poetry.
Sure, sure. This is from a residency that I did with a group of poets at a plantation. Myself, Hiram LaRue.
Lady Di.
Diane Woolman Parks.
Sister Joy?
Not Sister Joy, but she was a big supporter of this.
Tell us the name of that plantation.
It was called Woodlawn right. Plantation in Virginia.
And so these poets went there to experience the vibration and record that, and it was not easy, was it?
It was not easy at all. And I must shout out Hiram for just recognizing the importance of doing that, because he was invited first by himself, and he realized that it may not be solely his space to do that. So
he
called on us.
A great leader.
Yes, yes, wonderful person.
Oh, so is this what came out of that?
This came out of that.
Oh, I'd love to hear it.
Okay, so this is entitled First Walk. I am not being led through these genteel halls. I'm being pushed.
Mm.
Each threshold crossed feels like praise is being forced through fearful throats. The words of our guide ease out with reverence, as if the echo from these walls could actually slap you. And as they deliver their careful sermon, I can't help but wonder, was God ever inside here? The wood smells of elegant care and surfaces so polished that any particles daring to show up would undoubtedly slide off to the floor. After all, we are not here to see dirt, are we? Like a troublesome teen, I stand in places longer than I should, reach for delicate things I know I shouldn't, and nothing happens to me. This tour, though informative, ignores certain queries. Are the brick and mortar walls thick enough to muffle the moans of the people outside? Did they ever use the same cross-stitch sewing style from these beautiful pillows to close the skin of the disobedient? I walk out the glorious front entrance, and after 200 years, the Corinthian marble at the door still looks as if each slab had been carefully laid there by angelic hands. One more question, ma'am. Did the masters of Woodlawn ever realize just how close they were to God?
That was a power. And didn't that group go back again?
We went back several times. You know, it was necessary to do so because, you know, the first time I went, there was, for most of us, it was a very visceral reaction. Some of us couldn't finish the tour. And the poetry that came out of that first visit was, it was a response. It was a very emotional response. And I wanted to go back and focus on the people who were there, who lived there. Do you understand? Who toiled there, who suffered there. And I needed to go back and just kind of sit with that energy. And the poems that came out of that were way different. And I appreciated that experience.
So. What a fine experience.
Yes.
What a difficult one. But it birthed poetry.
Definitely.
And so poetry saves, for sure. Art mm-hmm. saves. Mm-hmm. So welcoming to yeah. Hiram
and
his
I
work.
Took, yeah, and I ended up going back and taking my students as well later on. Yeah.
Yep, it continues. Well, I know that you were on deaf poetry. You were really so vital in Washington's history, and you were commissioned to write a poem that was very much a high point of your life. Tell us what that important poem was.
Yes, yes. Actually, we're coming up on the anniversary of that because it was on October 16, 2011, I believe that was the date. We were commissioned to create a poem dedicated to the unveiling of the Martin Luther King Monument.
Oh, mm.
Myself, my partner, Daryl Perry, a.k.a. Mm-hmm. Nat Law, we collaborated with a violinist named Miri Ben-Ari and wrote a poem, a really powerful piece.
Was it for the unveiling?
It was for the unveiling. We performed it
for
there.
For Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm, right. And we unveiled it. We performed it at the National Mall at the unveiling on that night. We were like right after Stevie Wonder and before President Obama. So
well, that wasn't bad.
Right. That wasn't bad.
They were your opening acts.
Yeah, right. You know what I mean? So I can't. I was very, very touched. We got to sit there with legends. We met Dan Rather, Cicely Tyson, Jesse Jackson. We were, you know, so it was really.
Well, was it difficult when you were given that assignment to think, oh, my God, this is such a big thing. How are we going to do this?
It
or
was
did
daunting.
You just surrender into it?
It was daunting. But, you know, my partner and I, we take pride in these types of assignments and we do our homework and we.
How long did it take to write?
It took a little while only because we were collaborating with this musician from New York and we were never in the same room. It was always, you know, she sent her music and then we would listen to the music and try to respond to.
Was it the music on the side of the words or was it under the words?
It was
like a song.
Right. Yeah. She sent the song. It was about 4 minutes long.
Yeah.
So that was served as the background, the backdrop.
Yeah.
And then our words were kind of, you know, placed here and there.
Were you nervous?
That was nerve wracking. Yes. Yeah. Usually we're not nervous because we are kind of professionals when it comes
but
to getting on stage.
But having Stevie Wonder as your opening act and Barack Obama, that would make you a little bit. I think that would make you wake up.
Yeah. 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 It snapped me out of it.
Patrick Washington, you've done so much, and now you're doing so much with arts education. I remember I was with the young youth poet laureates, and I was enjoying the new ones from Prince George's County
mm-hmm.
and Fairfax and
Montgomery County, I believe.
And Montgomery County Income, and I say, what are you doing here? You said, I'm the one that created this program. Well, what of these youth poets laureate? How did you get involved? How did you sponsor this?
You know, this, I guess this came because, this all came about because of my teaching artist history. You know, throughout my years of being a you know, hip hop artist and a hip hop poet, I was always placed in front of young people, right?
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I was the most entertaining.
That's the platform,
right? Yeah, you know. So it was a good outreach for them. And then as the years went on, right about the 2000, and my son was born, I realized I needed to take it seriously. You know what I mean? And then I really began to think about how to. You know, affect change and what, you know, what I was going to leave, you know. You know, the legacy is important. And as
Is that when you started Poetry for Words, Beats and Life, Dialect?
Okay, so those are two different things. So Dialect is my personal arts education company. And I started that about 10 years ago. This is coming up on the 10th anniversary. And upon my retirement from my job, my 911 job, I think I told you about
that. I have to say, we thank you for your service. 30 years answering 911 calls.
Yes.
How are you still intact? I don't know how you absorbed all that.
Well, you know, that's the thing. I didn't absorb it. I always, you know, that was the type of job where you had to... you know, handle things and keep it moving because there was always somebody else calling, you know, so you could not sit in whatever incident happened a moment before. You had to move on to, because somebody's always going to need help. And so, and also
30 years, 30 years.
Well, let me also say that, the art was a great outlet. It was catharsis, right? Because I was able to, after I did all that, I was able to go and just kind of emote and kind of let it out, maybe write stories and poems. I do have a screenplay about my experiences at the job that's in the works. That's what you asked me about before. But, you know what I mean? So the art, you know, kind of got me through that time period. So upon my retirement is when I created Dialect and the Youth Poet Laureate program.
Wonderful.
And then that gives young people the opportunity to kind of speak to issues that are important to them, give them a voice in front of
officials. It takes one person to make a change. It takes one person to write the grant, to appeal to the people behind the marble walls. Mm. It takes a person to do it. And so you decided to be that person.
Yeah.
After another poem, we're going to find out all about what you're doing now, your comic book, your screenplay, your Poet Sees coming back to life, lots of stuff.
Okay.
So let's have one more poem and then we're gonna really get into it.
Okay. Reading the bottle in the kitchen, my daughter asks, "Daddy, what's virgin olive oil?" And I replied, "Virgin oil comes from olives that love their father. Oil so perfect, it really shouldn't be touched. It's usually held like a lullaby on the top shelf with a magical seal to be enjoyed only through the glow of sunlight and glass. This bottle is to remain tight like the tension of awkward dinners until the perfect occasion. Ask Dad when it's time. Even then, I will bring the bottle down, hand it to one born of a constellation that probably doesn't even exist yet. Until then, don't even think about using it. This oil will only adorn the heads of newborns you've never met." I lied and told her its olives can only come from the faraway land of Cordadenza. And I totally made that name up. Unaware that Cora was the daughter of Zeus and Demeter. Forgetting in Spanish, I'm actually calling her my heart. In Old English, my chorus. And the suffix denza means jazz in Trini or to dance. In Italian, the crater I've now dug is too massive to climb out of. So it's holy oil, baby. It's what the archangels use to shine their trumpets. I couldn't even believe what I was saying. So I know she didn't. And as I spoke, her face began to blur. So I stopped and told her the truth. Virgin oil was created with all of the love that two people could muster. It's the difference between warmed over echoes or a pot bubbling with laughter. It's only natural that someone would notice your shimmer. Pull you into them like a song's first breath. Not one who forces the top off or talks the cap into spinning off. It will be one who cares for the ingredients as much as the packaging. There will be a hiding place that only you create, a secret annex for the two of you. Your temperature will rise, a gentle bomb will go off, and one day, prayerfully, if you bring them to me, I will give them more face time than I was ever afforded in their place. This is no longer a metaphor, and you are no screen for me to play back my past transgressions. I'll be okay. I promise I will. Not my will, but your will be done, baby. You have the power to anoint.
You know, it's dangerous to ask a poet a question. It is dangerous to even bother trying to get a straight answer. And look what happened.
Hey, you know, anything could come out.
Let's talk about your future. And I think there's something to be said about Words, Beats, and Life.
Words, Beats, and Life. Yeah. That's an organization that I took a job with upon my retirement. You know, I wanted to step into my creative self more. You know, I'm writing more poetry now. And Words, Beats, and Life is a marvelous nonprofit. It's also an arts education company, but it's international.
And you were teaching.
I started off as a teaching artist there over the years as, you know, contract work. But upon my retirement, I took the job as poetry director for that group. And with that, they run the Youth Poet Laureate program for three other jurisdictions, Washington, D.C., Montgomery County, Maryland, and Arlington, Virginia. So now with mine, I now run those four.
Wow. It blossomed, didn't it? And you have a few private. First of all, Poem Seas is coming back.
Poem Seas, yes. We are constantly working on new stuff, but our last album was about almost 10 years ago. Ooh. But yeah. But we have new stuff in the works. We're still getting together. Shout out to Nat Law and DJ Stylus, and we have works coming
and
out.
And what
soon.
Is this screenplay about?
The screenplay is about my experience working as an emergency dispatcher.
Well, how can it be visual when it was all on the phone?
Well, that's the cool part.
You don't have to tell us all your secrets.
Well, no. The relationships. You know what I mean? It's that happened when you work 30 years sitting across from somebody like I am with you. I have my own. You know what I mean? I get to know you. I get to
the people on the other end of the line, right?
Well, no. The people on the other end of the line come and go. Those folks come and go.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, so what'll happen is in this particular screenplay, I'll get let's say you and I are having an affair. You and I are having an affair, but we're coworkers, right? We're arguing though, like off, you know, so you and I will argue, but then I'll take a call, help somebody deliver a baby while you're taking a call for a car accident, and then we'll come back and argue
some
more.
Do you know, that sounds like a radio play. That is cool.
That sounds pretty cool.
And what is this comic book you're doing? You've always loved comic books.
Throughout my whole life, I've loved comic books. I was a big collector. And I wish I hung on to them because
they're worth a fortune.
I would be rich now. But my brother and I, we upon the pandemic, when that came about, we kind of needed some outlet.
Well, who can draw?
We had a friend of ours, a guy named Bobby Lex, who is from Virginia. Incredible.
So you're doing the ideas and he's doing the visuals?
We wrote the story and then he did the visuals. He kind of blocked off, you know, as we give him the stories, he kind of, you know, take his time and he'll block it off. They call it blocking or formatting. And we did our first, I think we did our first comic book in 2021, and we've had three since. Yeah, and it's called Yenigma, Y-N-E-G-M-A.
You are something. You are very busy, very productive, very expansive, very much in our memories. You represent Washington very well.
I try to.
Let's have a closing poem.
Okay. For the Moon. On the sixth day when God made man, you were already smiling down on us. Not as father or son, you were of your own. Son of this earth, after walking almost everywhere, someone climbed a mountain one clear evening and their eyes met yours. So we were destined to meet. Touch your face and tell you all about our travels here below. Apollo protects the young and has immaculate aim, so we directed his bow and arrow towards you. Curved ourselves into crescents for a better look. Calculated the distance from our fingers to your face thanks to a handful of gifted thinkers, men and women we called computers, but were so much more. We tested those heavenly waters, sending up a shepherd who floated safely back to us. So then we found men of steel, surrounded them with power and propulsion, Aldrin, Armstrong, and Collins, men who jettisoned all fear, launched themselves with hope, and I don't know exactly where the prayers of astronauts go as five F1 engines fling them skyward, but I know you deserve at least a few lines. Like, dear brother, don't leave. Please be exactly where they said you'd be. All praises to your orbit, hallelujah for your dust, and the view from our home, from yours, that only 12 disciples have ever seen. We apologize for lunatics howling at you. Forgive us our trespasses as we tread over and plow through untouched basins and create new craters. Our nature is to wonder. We apologize for getting on your dark side. We've blamed so much of our troubles on you when in reality it was that sun who brought all of our sins to light. Please, let us dock safely with our destiny. And if you promise to be our mayor, Tranquilitatis, we promise we will not do to you what we did to your mother. Give us rest, a better vantage point from which to decide where we go next. Understanding that without you, everything spirals.
That is the voice of Patrick Washington. Our nature is to wander. Our nature is to wander.
Thank you so much.
This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress in the studios of the library. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Sinipet Fund, the Rivada Foundation, and the Anne Arundel Council for the Arts. And friends of the program, that would be Jean Nordhaus, Natalie Canivore, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and Mike Turpin is our engineer.